many people as I could. Of course, it was possible we would slaughter these creatures and still fail to talk Katashi into stopping the attack, but I couldn't think about that. It was the kind of doubt that could rob my friends of their lives. I nodded to Marissa. Let's do this! She grinned at me. Back to back, yeah? I nodded, turning around and feeling her press against me. Back to back! I lowered my blade, drawing in breath as I looked at the approaching creatures with renewed resolve.
Yeah, don't do that! Patrick shouted. Be ready to run!
I glanced at Patrick and Sarah. They were still holding hands, and they were glowing, a pulsing aura of bright blue and white enveloping the pair. I had no idea what that meant.
Oh, come on!
Marissa shouted. She broke from our short-lived formation, stepping forward and slamming another Bargenzi in the jaw with a fist. This one took the hit without flying back. It merely staggered. It didn't look any stronger. That meant Marissa was getting weaker. She'd burned through most of her mana fast. I spotted a spider rushing at her from the right. She turned to move, stepping backward, and promptly tripped over her own feet. I moved without thinking, stepping in the way and bringing my blade upward in a diagonal slice. I felt the transference mana running along the edge, as if it was a part of me, pushing it outward with the force of instinct. A vast wave of cutting energy ripped free from my strike, flashing into the distance. When it ended, the looming spider fell into two pieces, cleanly split in half.
Thanks!
I slashed to the left and right, warding off two encroaching Bargenzi as Marissa regained her footing. Patrick's voice hit me next.
Back off fast!
The monsters were keeping a healthy blade length away from me now, which gave us a moment to process Patrick's shout and move. As we started to run, two voices rose as one.
Child of the goddess, we call upon your aid!
Rain frost from the skies in a permafrost cascade!
The world darkened as the sky was filled with ice. Even with my blood burning with exertion, the newborn chill nearly froze me in place. Wedges of frost the size of wagons flashed downward from the sky in the dozens, smashing and cleaving the horde of monsters arrayed behind us. When Marissa and I made it back to Patrick and Sarah, we found them kneeling, still holding hands with their eyes frozen shut. Hoarfrost clung to their bodies, the writhing aura of ice around them too potent for me to come within arm's reach. I turned to see if any of the monsters had made it through the spell to close on us, but I had no need to worry. Javelins of frost continued to pummel those few creatures that had managed to survive the initial barrage, pinning limbs and piercing throats until not a single Bargenzi or spider remained standing. When the pair finally pulled their hands apart, shivering and panting, no further threats moved toward us. But the minotaurs still loomed in the distance, far beyond their spell's bombardment range. Teft staggered close to the pair as the aura around them began to fade.
You did? Well, I'm not sure I've ever seen first-year students manage a cooperative spell on that scale.
I will take care of things from here.
Jin stepped in front of the group, calmly walking past us toward the distant minotaur. I started to follow him, but he turned his head as I moved.
I will not be able to protect you if you are close.
I wanted to protest that I could protect myself, but Marissa had already almost taken a hit for me, so that clearly wasn't true.
I'll keep a safe distance. Marissa, protect the others.
Jin's tone brooked no argument. Even Teft simply gave Jin a scrutinizing glance and then nodded. I sincerely hoped that Teft knew something that I did not. As Jin marched forward, I stayed a good 20 yards back, deliberately avoiding the frigid grounds where the monsters had fallen moments before. A glance upward told me little. The ice from the spell had faded when Patrick and Sarah had broken contact, and the flyers above were holding steady. I couldn't see Vaniv in their midst. There were simply too many of them, and they were too high up to be clearly distinct. Of whether he'd succeeded or failed, I could see no clear sign. When Jin was a stone's throw away from the tower, the minotaur finally moved, and in spite of being the height of an ogre, it was fast. With a single motion, it hurled a tremendous two-handed axe through the air, the projectile whirling toward Jin's location with a visible aura of force.
and Jin wasn't moving fast enough to dodge. I lashed out in alarm, slashing in the air and pushing a wave of mana toward the axe, but I wasn't fast enough either. The blade slammed right into Jin's chest, and he vanished, reminding me of one of the very first things I'd made him, item that allows for the projection of an illusory self. A part of me expected to see the real Jin appear a moment later, but fortunately for Jin, his invisibility was from a completely separate item. Moments passed, and I still couldn't see any sign of him. I did hear him, though, when his guns began to fire. The Minotaur grunted as bullets slammed into his chest and neck. I'd enchanted Jin's revolvers, too. But even with transference enchantments to increase the velocity of the projectiles, the bullets didn't seem to be doing the Minotaur much harm. The Minotaur grunted, lowering its horns toward the sound of the noise, and charged. The sound of gunfire stopped. Jin must have realized that it was tracking him through sound as soon as it moved. I continued to move forward, slowly working to close the distance where I might be able to reliably hit the Minotaur with one of the transference waves from my sword. I really needed to come up with a good name for that technique at some point. The Minotaur halted its charge with no sign of impact, which was good. Then it turned toward me, which was bad. I raised my sword with both hands, preparing to push a transference slash at the creature as soon as it got close enough.
Kurin, move!
I jumped back just as the creature's axe swept through the air where I'd been moments before, close enough that it brushed the trailing fabric of my tunic. That was when I remembered that I hadn't properly recharged my barrier after the test. The axe continued to fly past me, circling around until it landed in the Minotaur's upraised hand. It threw the axe again immediately, right toward the location of the warning shout. A flashing sphere of blue told me that the axe had struck home. Jin appeared, falling to his knees as the axe flew back to the Minotaur. He had no visible injuries. The barrier had successfully prevented the axe from cutting him, but barriers were terrible at stopping raw kinetic force. From the way Jin was coughing and gripping his chest, one of his pistols fallen from his hand, I was pretty sure he'd just lost a couple of ribs. The Minotaur let out an echoing laugh, snorting into the air, and caught the axe as it flew back to the creature's hand. It advanced slowly now, hefting the axe over its shoulder, giving Jin more than enough time to flee. The problem, of course, was that Jin wasn't getting back up. I was close enough that I could hear him breathing now, but it was a ragged wheeze. I glanced back at my group. Marissa was bolting toward us, but she was running at an ordinary mortal's speed now. No aura of gold flickered around her. No guardian power remained to give her strength. I ran to stand in the Minotaur's path. The creature tilted its head downward, eyeing me with disdain. I ripped the ring that Professor Orden had given me off my finger, tossing it at Jin. Fortunately, we were close enough that it hit him straight in the chest.
"Put that on and use it now!"
I didn't wait to see if he complied. I had a mere instant to step aside before the axe slammed into the space where I'd been standing. I countered with a thrust into the Minotaur's thigh. The creature howled, stepping back in surprise. I gave my blood-stained blade a flourish in the air.
"You just hurt my friend! That was a mistake!"
I turned my gaze up to meet the Minotaur's.
"Let's dance!"
The Minotaur was a good 10 feet tall, almost twice my height, and probably at least 5 or 6 times my mass and strength. But that wasn't much different from a child of 10 learning to fight against a champion duelist father. As he pulled his axe out of the ground, I rolled between his legs, turning and slashing his hamstrings. The enchanted blade bit into flesh, but it didn't cut straight through bone like it had with the Bargenzi. The creature's sunstone aura was a natural shield, dampening the force of my blows. I cut twice more before it managed to spin, each cut leaving only a slight mark. But it didn't matter. As the axe swept around, I ducked beneath it, thrusting upward to pierce straight into the Minotaur's chest. The blade only sank in a few inches, but that was enough. I pushed on the aura in the blade, blasting mana straight into the wound. The Minotaur fell backward, dropping the axe to clutch its chest. I smirked, moving in to strike a final blow, and its hand shot out, grabbing me by the neck. I struck out in shock as it began to squeeze,
but it turned its head aside, and my thrust aimed for the neck scraped harmlessly across a cheek. My vision reddened as the minotaur began to squeeze, and then the sound of a single shot rang out, and the pressure faded to nothing. I fell to my knees, panting as the minotaur collapsed at my side, lifeless. Smoke rose from the hole where a bullet had pierced the back of the creature's skull. I dropped my sword, shivering. I couldn't quite process what had just happened. It wasn't until I saw Marissa kneeling over Jin's fallen form that I managed to push myself to my feet. I staggered past the fallen minotaur toward where Marissa was shaking Jin.
"Wake up, Jin! Wake up!"
"Oh, goddess." I got closer to Jin. I saw something shining on the ground just in front of him. The ring. He hadn't put it on. He'd picked up a pistol and saved me instead.
"Resh! Jin!"
Marissa glanced at me with a panicked expression.
"Corin, we need to do something! He's not conscious and I don't think he's breathing right!"
I swept up the ring and knelt by the pair.
"Give me his hand!"
Marissa looked at me in confusion, taking in the ring a second later. She gripped one of his hands and moved it to me. The ring didn't quite fit on his pointer finger, so I slipped it on his index finger instead. I didn't have a good idea of how it worked. Orden had me activate it with my own mana. I didn't know if I could make it work for someone else, but I had to try. I closed my eyes, focused my mind, and pushed gray mana into the ring. And I had no idea if anything happened. Since I wasn't the one wearing the ring, I wouldn't be the one experiencing the regeneration. Thus, I felt no change. I panicked for a minute like an idiot before thinking to activate my attunement. There was a faint aura stretching from the ring across his arm, but it didn't seem to be spreading further. It wasn't enough. I gripped the ring and pushed my mana harder, flooding it with gray, but the ring resisted the flow. It wasn't meant to be used in this way, and I could only push it to a limited degree.
"Wake him up if you can. The ring isn't working properly without his mind to regulate it."
I stood up, and Marissa's eyes followed me.
"What are you doing?"
"Going for help."
I turned toward the visage of the goddess, his body burning with sacred fire, and I walked with determination. I came within about 20 feet before the visage deigned to acknowledge my presence. His head turned ever so slightly, his lips twisting downward. Not an auspicious start.
"I know you, mortal."
Katashi raised a hand to his chin.
"You may kneel before me."
Normally, I'd want to say something snappy to anyone being that sanctimonious. But this was Katashi. He could annihilate me with a gesture. So, grinding my jaw, I knelt.
"Great Katashi,
I did not give you leave to speak, scion of House Cadence. I was merciful before because I sensed you were not aware of the actions of the ones you freed, and because you are unimportant."
I pressed my head against the dirt in supplication. I hoped it would be enough. Katashi flickered closer. As he reappeared above me, I could feel a burst of pressure push down on me from his aura, and not merely on my body. I could feel the mana within me constricting. The visage's mere presence was twisting my power, paralyzing it. I trembled in abject terror. Authority figures generally didn't scare me. I had no hesitation about mouthing off to someone like Teft, but if I made a mistake here, not only could Katashi annihilate me outright, he could kill everyone I cared about with another gesture.
"Why have you come to me? You may answer honestly."
I raised my head just slightly to make it easier to hear my reply. "I was hoping to stop the attacks," and with a sliver of bravery piercing through my fear, I managed an addition.
"And my friend over there is dying. He's a Daelin."
I didn't know much about House Daelin, but I did know that they were the ruling House of Delanos, and that Katashi was their patron visage. I didn't know what Jin's connection to them was, but I hoped it would be sufficient.
"I will tend to one of my flock."
I felt an almost palpable sense of relief as the words rolled over me and the pressure faded. When I looked up, Katashi was no longer hovering above me. He was near Jin and Marissa. And Marissa, bless her bravery, was standing defensively over Jin with her fists raised. She must have been too far away to hear my conversation with Katashi. Katashi tilted his head downward to examine her. I envisioned a thousand ways he could make her die. My steps were feeble, but they carried me closer as he spoke to her.
"You would stand between me and this one?"
I don't know how, but Marissa stood unfazed by his voice, her back unbowed by the pressure that had torn my mind to nothing.
"Begging your pardon, Mevesich, but if you're meaning to harm him, I'm afraid so."
"You are aware of who I am?"
His aura brightened as he spoke. I could feel the pressure even from a distance then, sapping away my will to even stand. Marissa remained unbowed.
"I am a visage. You be Katashi, sir. Not meaning to be rude, but I'm a guardian, sir. I'd stand between my friends and the goddess herself."
Katashi floated down, his feet touching the ground. He stepped close to her, his face nearly brushing against hers, their eyes fixed together. And then he stepped back, folding his hands in front of him and bowed at the waist.
"There is no cause in this world more valuable than the desire to protect another. You have proven a worthy companion to this one. He walks a difficult path. I am pleased that one such as you will be at his side."
Katashi knelt, pressing his hands against Jin's chest.
"Breathe."
A wave of white light flowed from Katashi's hands to encompass Jin's entire body, and Jin breathed in. Marissa raised her hands to her mouth, falling to her own knees to grip Jin's hand. She turned her head up to Katashi.
"Many thanks, Mevesich, for your kind words, but more, for saving my friend."
Katashi released his hands from Jin's fallen form and stood. He turned his head back to Marissa.
"Worthy one, speak your name."
Marissa bowed her head.
"Marissa Callahan, Mevesich."
"Marissa Callahan, reveal your attunement to me."
"Yes, Mevesich."
Marissa didn't show the slightest hint of embarrassment as she unbuttoned the top buttons of her uniform, opening it up to display the center of her chest. Her attunement was over her heart. Katashi's hand glowed again as he spoke.
"Marissa, you will need greater strength to protect your friends from harm. You have already begun to walk this path on your own, but I will grant you a sliver of my strength in acknowledgement of your bravery."
A flicker of blue fire appeared on his finger as he reached forward and drew an extra line on her sigil. And for the first time, I saw an attunement change. Marissa gasped, clenching her fists. Her entire body trembled, and she screamed into the air as an aura of crimson fire poured out of her. No, not crimson. Carnelian. She'd reached the next level of her attunement. The aura persisted around her even as she bowed her head.
"Thank you again, Mevesich, for your kindness. It is undeserved."
He glanced back to her for one more moment.
"Our business has concluded."
And then he was in front of me again, with no sign of how he'd crossed the intervening space. I'd seen teleportation before, of course, but this was effortless. I couldn't imagine even Professor Orden moving in the same way, without a single telltale gesture or word. I was wise enough to kneel immediately this time.
"Cadence, I tire of speaking with humans, even if there is a virtuous one among you. You spoke of a wish to stop the attacks on the city. I am not inclined to do so. You may attempt to persuade me, but I am not in a patient mood."
"If you will forgive a question, why are you attacking?"
Katashi waved a hand dismissively.
"Your kingdom's leaders are aware of their failure, but you are but a child, and I will forgive you for the inquiry. My brother is missing. Conspirators among your people hide him from me. This is unacceptable."
I frowned. I knew Tenjin hadn't been seen recently in human society, of course, and that Katashi being here was unusual. I'd suspected that Katashi was pulling a coup, if anything. I hadn't considered that he might have been worried about his own brother.
I sympathize with you more than you might realize, Great One. I have spent the last 5 years hoping I could find my own brother in the tower. That has been my principal motivation in life.
Katashi offered no reply. He simply turned his head aside. A moment of humanity, perhaps? I needed to capitalize on that if I could.
If you will stop the assault, I will vow to do everything in my power to help you find your brother, just as I've searched for my own.
Katashi looked down at me.
Protection is a worthy cause, as I told your brave guardian, and I sense there is a degree of truth in your offer. You will make an effort, though not with all of your will. I do not fault you for only having a mortal's resolve. But your vow is insufficient. You are but a child.
The visage folded his arms. His expression seemed tired.
These attacks will drive the conspirators out of hiding. I have no desire to harm the innocent while battling the wicked, but that is a price I am willing to pay to discover my brother's location. The longer I wait, the more likely my brother will be harmed.
I understood his feelings on that matter all too well. Katashi shook his head, turning to leave.
Wait! Please! Wait, Great Visage. I want to help find your brother. Do you have any idea who might have taken him?
Katashi spun, the segment of his aura closest to him igniting into fire.
Oh, I know quite well where to begin my search. Her name is Vera Corrington. You helped her escape. I am aware you were deceived. That is the only reason I have not destroyed you.
I lowered my head.
Thank you for your magnanimity, Visage. Please forgive my foolishness.
You wish for forgiveness. You wish for me to stop these attacks.
His hands clenched into fists, which, of course, were also on fire.
You ask for much, Cadence, and I am not known for my forgiving side. But there may yet be a way to earn what you ask for. In freeing those prisoners, you may have gained their trust.
Oh, I did not like where this was going at all.
You will bring Vera Corrington to me within the tower. If you agree to be bound to this, I will give this city a reprieve. If you should fail or try my patience, I will resume the assault. And heed my words. This strike showed great restraint on my part.
He paused, glaring down at me, his eyes burning with, you guessed it, fire.
You have seen how many of my winged ones merely gather around the tower. Next time I will send them all. You have seen a scattered few of my ground forces. Next time I will bring every one. You have seen the damage done by a child of the serpent. Next time I will bring the serpent herself.
I shivered involuntarily, remembering when I'd seen Seiryu in the tower. The god serpent's eye had been larger than my entire body. Mizuchi, one of Seiryu's children, was already demolishing this section of the city without difficulty. I couldn't imagine anything managing to even slow Seiryu down.
How much time will I have?
You will have 1 week to find her and bring her to me. She must be alive. I will await you in the chamber in which we first met.
I winced.
That's not much time, Great Visage. I'm sure you're aware that my resources are limited, and if you're right and there are people in our government working against you...
This is not a negotiation.
I extended my right hand.
Then we have a deal.
Katashi grasped my hand in his, and I understood that my gesture had been a mistake when my flesh began to burn.
The pact is sealed.
When he withdrew his hand, I had a mark on the back of my palm. It was not an attunement. No, I was not nearly so lucky. It was a brand. The sigil of Katashi had been burned into my skin, a reminder of our pact, and, more than likely, the sign that I'd been bound with some kind of divine gesh. There were several things horribly wrong with what had just happened. I just agreed to do something I might not be capable of doing, and the consequences would hurt far more than just me if I failed. Moreover, I just agreed to hand over someone to an angry visage who might have nothing to do with his brother's actual disappearance. Vera had stabbed me in the back a little, but she didn't exactly deserve a visage's anger if she hadn't been involved, and I didn't see much chance of her surviving either way. I had a pretty good idea of where to find Vera, or at least a place to start. That inventor I'd seen months earlier was named Aloris Corrington. The likelihood of there being multiple people in the city with the surname Corrington, both from Kaelford, that were completely unrelated, well, chances were slim. That was the worst part of all. I knew that because it was fairly obvious, and that meant other people would have figured it out too. Katashi had told me directly that higher-ups in the city knew about this already. The chances that no one in their inner circle had considered asking another Corrington about Vera's location was also extraordinarily low, which meant, more than likely, that someone with power was deliberately hiding her. I felt my hand burning deeper as Katashi's wings stretched, and he flew into the cloud of winged figures above, and then threw them toward the top of the tower. They followed immediately, soaring skyward until they disappeared from view, and as I glanced toward the city, I saw Mizuchi's massive form dislodge itself from another building to soar upward toward the sky. Katashi had kept his side of the bargain. I wasn't so sure I'd be able to keep mine. Chapter 18. Reconnaissance. I stood staring at the retreating spiral of gargoyles in Carvenzi, lost in thought until I noticed that one of them was coming down rather than up. Van Eve landed next to me and then turned his own gaze upward with a smug grin. "Ha! See that? Just a few minutes and I've got all of them running." I rolled my eyes. "I'm pretty sure that's not why they're leaving, Van Eve. Also flying, not running." He waved a hand dismissively. "Semantics. The point is that they're fleeing from my majesty and might." I rubbed my forehead. "Right, right. Let's get back to the others." Jin was already standing by the time we reached him, although he looked a little wobbly. Marissa silently helped steady him, but Jin waved her away. She looked like she was almost ready to collapse herself. I slowed down for the two of them. "Jin, how are you feeling?" Jin grimaced.
"The healing was thorough. I am well."
That was a tremendous relief.
"I'm glad to hear it. Let me know if you feel any resurgence of pain, though."
He gave me a hasty nod, looking a little uncomfortable. I was still concerned, but it was clear he didn't want me to press further. Marissa stumbled, nearly falling, and Jin had to catch and steady her. She blinked, looking about as surprised as I was.
"My head feels swimmy."
"You probably overused your mana. You need help walking?"
She paused, and then nodded.
"If you don't mind terribly."
I slipped an arm under her shoulder, and we continued walking. The rest of the group was steadily making their way toward us. Teft still looked unsteady, nearly tripping more than once. I'd never seen him anything other than completely collected and in control. The sight was disconcerting. Especially since Mizuchi had taken that much out of him with a single attack, and one that wasn't even directed at us. Just how much of a gulf was there between that serpent and an ordinary monster? I knew intellectually that monsters from higher up in the tower were supposed to be progressively stronger, but the sheer difference in scale was mind-boggling. I could still see the vast creature flying toward the top of the tower. On an impulse, I activated my attunement for just a moment. Mizuchi's aura was a deep green. It was the first emerald-level aura I'd seen in person. Mother had called herself an emerald, but I'd only seen her aura in a vision through someone else's eyes. I knew Orden's tunic was supposed to carry an emerald-level enchantment, but I'd never been able to see the aura. Presumably her illusionist abilities were keeping it hidden.
Emerald.
I glanced at Teft, confirming my suspicion that his aura was a golden yellow. Citrine was on the higher end of what I'd seen within the school. I suspected Orden's illusionist attunement was in the same range. Only two levels below the monster, and he'd still barely been able to defend us from collateral damage. If Katashi decided to unleash Seiryu, the god serpent, what chance did any of us have? As powerful as Mizuchi was, Seiryu was hundreds of times more massive. Total mana generally correlated to the size of a monster. I doubted the entire force of our military could stand against Seiryu for more than moments. I shivered, turning to look at the area where Mizuchi had been attacking. Bodies everywhere. Some still moving, but most lying still. Dozens of dead. Maybe hundreds. I could only see one area that had been attacked. There were undoubtedly others. If I wanted to prevent the death of thousands, I had some serious work to do. Vaniv flapped his wings, clearing the distance to Sarah in a few moments.
Ah, my summoner, you push yourself too far. You must be more careful.
Sarah folded her arms.
Concerned, Vaniv? Or do you just want something?
Can't it be both?
Sarah sighed. We'll finalize the details of your contract soon. For the moment, we need to go help triage any survivors over there. She gestured toward the line of demolished buildings where Mizuchi had struck. I nodded to her, grateful that Sarah was thinking about the wounded like I was. Taft shook his head.
Absolutely not. We are going straight back to the university. It was a mistake to ever allow you children out here. What happened with Katashi? I couldn't hear everything you were saying from a distance.
I folded my arms. Katashi is leaving for now. The danger is past. We should be able to go help the injured safely.
Incorrect, Corin. He pointed upward. What do you see?
I didn't want to take the bait, but I scanned upward anyway. The complete absence of a weather shield? Taft nodded.
And what do you think might have caused such a thing?
Patrick trudged up next to me, interjecting before I had a chance to reply.
Giant monster serpent, obviously.
The professor sighed.
The giant monster serpent never left this area, Mr. Wayland, and the shield has several redundant mana generators located throughout the city.
Meaning sabotage, I cut in.
Quite. Sabotage on quite an extreme scale. Katashi himself would not bother with such an action. If he wanted to eradicate the city, he could do it himself. Rather, this implies an opportunistic action from a third party, one that was either already poised to strike as soon as anything gave them a good window, or alternatively, one that was aware that Katashi was about to launch an assault.
Patrick frowned.
Who could have known that Katashi was going to come out here with monsters?
I had some ideas about that. Katashi said that there were people in high places that already knew what he wanted. He seemed to think he was deliberately obstructed by someone in our government. He used the term conspirators. I waved in the direction of the academy, and the group started walking. Near the back, I could hear Sarah talking quietly to Vaniv, presumably solidifying their arrangement. Taft ran a hand through his hair.
That's not surprising, but it's dire news if it's true. We've been on the brink of war with Edria for months. This could mean someone supporting them has infiltrated our government. We need to get you to safety. Then I need to know everything Katashi told you.
Rash! Traitors?
Patrick mumbled.
This just gets worse and worse.
I clenched my fists at the possibility. Fighting monsters was horrible enough. I didn't like the idea of harming any kind of living creature. War against other humans? It was disgusting to me that someone could justify that idea. But it was also all too typical. I couldn't stand how little human life meant to so many people. My eyes moved back to the wreckage, the survivors picking up the wounded. My jaw tightened. This was just a warning attack, and it had already claimed lives. A portion of that was on me, for my whole role in getting Vera out of that prison. I had little doubt that someone else would have freed her if I hadn't. The recently dead body in front of the cell was proof enough that other people could get into the same room. But would it have played out differently if whoever else had stumbled into that cell had asked more questions? If they'd just freed that child and left her behind? Or freed Karis and left the other two? I didn't know if that would have made things go better or worse. All I knew is that people were dead, and that I'd played a part in it. I'd never fix that. No amount of service would give their lives back.
I told myself I'd find their names, maybe do something for their families when I was older and more influential, but it felt hollow, insufficient. First, I needed to keep things from getting worse. Then, I'd find out who was pulling the strings on this whole mess. And if it was Vera, we'd have a reckoning very soon. Professor Orden appeared in front of us before we managed to make it to the academy gates. I tensed, hand going for my sheathed sword before I recognized her, and I let it rest on the hilt even after I did. I wasn't quite sure who I could trust at this point. True, Orden teleporting us here had managed to resolve the attack much earlier than it might have been otherwise. I was grateful for that. But her whole connection with the voice of the tower meant she was deeply involved with something, and I didn't know who or what she was actually working for. It was about time to get some real answers.
Lyras!
Teft sounded exhausted when he spoke, his tone tinged with obvious frustration.
Can you get us to Commander Bennett? We need to talk.
Professor Orden shook her head.
I need a minute to rest. Mana is too depleted. I'll walk with you, though. Is everyone safe?
Ah, so now she's concerned. I'm touched. Teft gave her a curt nod.
Barely.
Sufficient.
She turned her head toward the rest of us.
I'm sorry to have sent you children into danger. Normally I'd abhor sending you to take a risk like that, but I knew Corrin had a chance to end this conflict. And he did. Well done, Corrin.
I raised my right hand, showing her the brand. Her eyes widened just slightly. Not without consequence. He'll be back in a week with reinforcements if we don't do what he wants. I need to find someone for him and bring her back to the tower.
Orden took a step closer, tilting her head as she examined the mark. That is most unfortunate. But manageable, I should hope.
You seem to know more about my new adornment than I do. I flexed my hand in the air, suddenly self-conscious.
Care to share?
Orden folded her hands in front of her.
There are multiple types of visage marks. Some are permanent signs of a visage's favor, and they confer abilities similar to an attunement. This one, however, appears to be temporary. It's designed to ensure that you successfully complete the task you've been charged with.
I raised my hand, looking at it with my attunement active for the first time. The glow that simmered from the burned flesh was a deep blue. Sapphire, I realized.
Sweet goddess. I guess levels higher than emerald actually do exist, even if it's possible that only the visages have that kind of power.
It wasn't feeding power into me, though. It wasn't like I suddenly had a sapphire aura myself. Experimentally, I tried to reach into it to draw mana out of the mark, but I couldn't even feel anything there. Apparently, it wasn't meant to be a tool for my use.
Any idea what it might do?
I lowered my hand.
Orden shrugged. I've never seen one of Katashi's marks. Visage marks are usually themed to the visage. My assumption is that if you don't complete the task, it will most likely judge you. I'm sure you can figure out for yourself what that entails.
I briefly contemplated how difficult it would be to safely remove my hand. Jin stepped up beside me, speaking for the first time I could remember since he lost consciousness.
Katashi would not have chosen you if you could not succeed.
I wasn't so certain about that, but I appreciated his confidence.
Thanks, Jin. It is nothing. You must focus on your task. Put your doubts aside.
I nodded.
Right.
Katashi gave me a limited period of time to find someone. I should probably start immediately. Teft put a hand on my shoulder.
We're in no shape to be dealing with any sort of danger right now, Corrin.
I flinched away from his touch. It was probably supposed to be reassuring, but I didn't have the best experience with authority figures holding me.
Right. We'll rest first.
Orden started walking toward the academy, and we followed in her wake. Care to fill me in on what you've discovered? I wasn't so sure that was a good idea, but maybe I could make this work.
Sure. But only in trade.
Whatever do you mean, Corrin?
She glanced back over her shoulder at me. I narrowed my eyes.
Not in the mood, Lyris. You've been looking into this, or things related to it, for months, and you cut me out of it, only to throw me and my friends,
I gestured to the group for emphasis,
straight into danger as soon as it was convenient for you. People are dead because we didn't solve this sooner.
I'm done with secrets, at least among the people here. I'm going to tell them what I know, and you're going to fill in the blanks. She sighed.
You do realize you're exposing them to more danger by getting them further involved?
I scanned my group of friends. Anyone not want to know what's going on here? We can cut this discussion short and resume it later if anyone wants an out. Patrick frowned, an uncharacteristic look of seriousness on his face.
People are getting hurt, Corrin.
I, for one, can't turn a blind eye to that. Jin nodded.
It is as Patrick says, and Katashi has mocked you. I'm bound to see this through.
Marissa scratched the back of her head.
Suppose I'm curious about all this, too.
I turned to look at Sarah. She just tilted her head at me.
Don't even ask, Corrin. Of course I want to know what's going on. Veneve is staying, too.
Somehow I'd forgotten about the 6-foot-tall stone man with wings and impressively chiseled, possibly literally chiseled, abs.
Veneve put a hand over his chest.
Oh, yes. I love secrets. Tell me all your secrets.
Professor Orden rolled her eyes.
Sarah, don't be absurd. Put that thing away.
She shrugged.
I could, but I'm not going to. Veneve is not a thing. He's an intelligent entity, and he doesn't like ceasing to exist, even temporarily.
Interesting. Seems like Sarah is thinking along similar lines to my own, even if she isn't quite as firmly against violence.
Veneve turned his head towards Sarah, then back to Warden.
This pleases me. Let the revealing of secrets commence.
Orden glowered at Veneve.
Ugh. I am tired of this discussion. If she wants a monster like you to bring information back to the tower, so be it.
Professor Orden paused for another moment before continuing. We need to move somewhere more secure before we have this particular talk. Corrin, I will accept your trade, given the circumstances. We'll walk a few more minutes while I regain my mana, then I'll teleport us somewhere secure to talk.
I nodded.
Very well. I hoped that a few minutes would give Taft enough time to recover some of his strength, just in case this went as badly as I imagined it could. I didn't think anyone else had a splinter of a chance against Orden if she decided to do us harm. We walked in relative silence until Orden paused, deeming it time, and instructed us to join hands. We formed a large circle before, and then she spoke.
Spirit of wind and air, I command you. By the pact sealed between us, I invoke your power. Rise around us and within us. Carry us upon your ethereal wings to the place of greatest safety. Veiled teleport!
And once again, we moved. Fortunately, I didn't throw up this time. Apparently the ring had done its job. I'd almost forgotten about the headache I'd been suffering, and the pain from my nose had faded to a dull throb. I remembered the whole incident with our last teleport as we arrived, and it occurred to me that Jin still had the ring, but that was probably for the best for now. Katashi had healed him, but I wasn't sure how thorough that spell was. If he'd really had a lung punctured by a rib like I suspected, he probably needed the ring vastly more than I did. Our surroundings were at least reasonably familiar, if only for their lack of decor. We were standing in a vast space of blackness, with no obvious floor or walls, and only a single floating torch shedding light. It was the same place that Orden had taken me the first time we'd had a private talk, or at least one that was visually identical to it. I couldn't assume it was the same one. I didn't know enough about this space to know if there could be several of them. Once we managed to get our bearings, Orden waved a hand toward the floor.
"You may all sit."
Patrick frowned.
What, on the darkness? Where even are we?
A safe place, Orden replied. And worry not, I will be hospitable.
She sat down, a chair appearing beneath her as she made the motion. Dubiously, I attempted to sit as well, finding a chair beneath me a moment later. The others followed suit, save Jin, who remained standing.
Orden waved a hand at me.
I suggest you offer some context to everyone before we get into the more recent details.
I sighed, rubbing my temples.
I suppose I should.
Sarah shot me a frustrated look.
Yes, I'm sure some of us would very much like to hear what you have to say.
I glanced back at Sarah.
I'm sorry, Sarah.
Professor Orden made it clear that this information could be dangerous. I was planning to tell you after I did some more research. She sighed.
Fine. Just don't make more decisions about what I should know without consulting me.
I can't promise that. Even implying the existence of a secret can cause problems. And I'm sure you understand the necessity for discretion on some things. You made a contract not to tell anyone about your summoned monster, for example. She drew in a breath.
You have a point. I suppose I haven't told you everything either.
Fine. I'm not going to make a big deal out of this. But try to be more considerate. I nodded. I will. In the meantime, let me get this story out of the way. She waved for me to go ahead, and I felt a hint of relief. I turned so that I could face as many of our group as possible. They arranged their chairs in a circle, facing inward, so that everyone could see me while I was talking. Okay, so I was in the tower for my judgment when I found an unusual room. It had 3 jail cells in it, each of which contained a person. 2 of them were conscious, the 3rd was a young boy who was out cold. The 2 people who were awake both asked for me to free them. I had a key from an earlier part of the judgment, and I found a body on the floor of the room that was carrying a 2nd key. We talked a bit. The young woman, Vera, tried to tell me that the masked man in the cell next to her was a criminal. Long story short, I opened the cells for Vera and the unconscious kid, then the other guy broke out on his own. Sarah stood up, indicating she had a question, so I paused. Yeah? Sarah folded her arms. Let me get this straight. You had 2 jail cell keys that worked on the cell doors? I shook my head. I'd considered this irregularity before, too. No, ordinary keys that seemed to be designed for rooms in the judgment process. And they worked on the cell doors just like that? I nodded. Yeah. Teft stood and joined the conversation.
Implying that whoever created the cells designed them for people taking the judgment to open them.
I frowned. Or maybe they were just magic keys designed to open any normal lock? Teft scratched his chin.
Unlikely. I've been through the climber's gates several times, and I've seen many magic keys, but they're always tied to specific types of locks. Did the keys vanish after you used them?
I nodded. Yes. Otherwise I could have just opened all 3 with 1 key.
That indicates a deliberate puzzle-like design, then, where you're forced to make a choice on who to free. I can see why you originally interpreted it as merely a part of the judgment. No true jail cells would be designed to be opened by keys found by any random person in the tower.
Sarah turned to Teft. What would the point of locks like that even be, then? It obviously wasn't just part of the judgment if he set real people free.
Teft leaned forward against his cane.
I can see a few main possibilities. One is that the prisoners were intended to be freed at a specific time, but in a way that would make it look, both to the person with the keys and the people in the cells, like they were being rescued. I consider this fairly likely.
He raised 2 fingers.
2. Whichever visage was overseeing the test wanted Corrin to free a real prisoner to see the consequences of his actions. Highly unlikely.
Teft lifted a 3rd finger.
3. The prisoners were meant to be freed, but the time and person who freed them were irrelevant, perhaps because they're meant to distract from something more significant. I consider this about as likely as the 1st option.
All of which implied that I'd simply played into some sort of larger plot. This was both unsettling, since I'd been duped, and a little comforting in that it took away some of my feeling of guilt for my actions. Ah, the sweet power of deflecting responsibility. Sarah said one more thing while she was sitting down. Could one of the prisoners have been the one who set up the whole thing? I considered that. Possible, although they would have to be exceedingly patient. The prisoners said they were in their cells for days, maybe weeks. I can't quite remember. I don't imagine them setting up a situation where they'd be stuck in a cell for that long. Probably not, Sarah replied. Teft gestured to me.
We can think about this part more later, please. Continue the story.
I nodded. Okay, so now the prisoners are out. The unconscious kid is in bad shape, so we feed him some water. Then we make our way through the next couple rooms. We end up in this huge antechamber with a stairway to a higher floor.
That shouldn't happen in a judgment, Teft cut in.
Clearly it did, Lyris replied. Anyway, I continued. Katashi himself is at the top of the stairs, and he's not pleased. Vera and I run for cover. Katashi gets into a fight with the masked man, Karras, and somehow Karras manages to hold him at bay.
I still don't know how that ended, because Vera and I grabbed the kid and fled.
Teft and Orden exchanged meaningful looks. I kept talking.
We get into the next room, which has a spire guardian. I give Vera my weapon, and she handles it. Then she points it at me, takes the kid, and tells me not to follow. I sighed. So, then I'm by myself. By this point, I decided not to tell them about the book. It was very clear that Professor Orden wasn't supposed to find out about it for whatever reason. So, I continued with a minor simplification. This cloaked figure appears, tells me it's called the Voice of the Tower, and it ushers me into another room. There's a fountain in there. I drink, I get an attunement, then it tells me to carry a message to Lyris. I gestured at Professor Orden, and to leave immediately. Oh, and it gave me a sword, the blue shiny one. There was an exit door in the room, so I took it. Definitely wasn't going to tell them about the little flask of water I took either. Professor Orden stood up. And Corin did meet his responsibility to the voice and carried the message to me. Thank you, Corin. I was glad to be done with my explanation, but I had a question for her in return. I'd really like to know who or what that voice actually is. She nodded. And I suppose you deserve an answer after all this. A bit of context first. I am a member of an organization that serves as observers and messengers for the Visages. We are colloquially referred to as Whispers. Jin tilted his head toward her a little more suddenly than I was used to seeing him moving. That clearly got his attention. Teft looked startled, too.
A whisper? You never told me.
You didn't need to know, darling. Don't make a fuss right now. I'm explaining.
Teft let out a growl and folded his arms, looking more agitated than I'd seen him.
Was there a thing going on between these two? I didn't want to think about that.
Orden paced around behind her chair before continuing. Each visage has dedicated whispers, of course, but we all work toward a collective goal. I'm a whisper of Tengen. Unfortunately, I can't let you know about the identities of any of our other members. Even telling you this much is unusual. I understood the logic there, but it was exceedingly frustrating. She continued talking. The voice that Corin spoke to in the tower was, well, let's call him my associate. He was evaluating Corin for membership in our organization, but I suspect that route might be difficult now. The mark on your hand makes you a tad too obvious. We tend to try to blend in. I rubbed at my hand. Figures that I'd be disqualified for the amazing-sounding secret society at the same time I found out about their existence. Teft grimaced.
And what have you and this voice been doing, Lyris? What have you gotten into?
A whole lot of nothing interesting, Jonathan. Investigating the backgrounds of the people that Corin freed from those cells, as well as the disappearance of Tengen.
You consider that uninteresting?
Teft scoffed. Only in that I found so little of relevance. Whoever is concealing Tengen is far beyond my level of power and influence. Vera and the child are nearby and already under observation. They appear to have deep ties to the government of Kaelford. I'm not sure if the children are aware of this, but in spite of their distance, most of our government considers Kaelford our closest allies.
Jin put a hand to his forehead.
Kaelford? Really? They're your closest ally?
The disdain in his tone was obvious, but I could understand it. If he really was from the royal house of Delanos, a much geographically closer ally sitting directly to our north, he'd have every reason to be upset.
Orden turned to him. It's not my opinion, Jin. As I said, that's the stance of some people in the government.
He grunted and gave her a nod.
Very well.
Orden leaned up against her chair. Now, Vera's significance still isn't clear to me, but she is a member of a powerful merchant family. She appears to be living with her brother, Aloris, an automobile engineer.
Just as I'd suspected.
I stood up.
Do you think that they're spies for the Kaelford government?
Possible, but unlikely. Allies do spy on allies at times, but they've been largely keeping to themselves, and we're well aware of their presence and location. They're not doing anything overt, which implies to me that they're waiting for something.
I nodded. Like Katashi's attack.
Would they have known the location of the Weathershield's generators? Is that information public? Lyris pursed her lips, contemplating for a moment before answering. An automotive mechanic does potentially have the skill set to sabotage a generator, so you have an interesting idea. If Kaelford had decided to side with Edria in a conflict, they could have sent agents to take down our shield. But I don't think they would have been able to locate all the generators. I'll check with my contacts to see if they can determine where Aloris was during the attack. It's an interesting hypothesis. I felt vindicated by the idea having some merit at least, and sat back down. But on a hunch, I sat down on an empty space rather than my chair. Another chair appeared to catch me. This place was amazing. I needed to figure out how it worked at some point. Orden didn't look nearly as excited about the chair manifestation room as I did. Instead, she turned toward Teft for the next part of her explanation. The other prisoner that Corrin freed was Karras Salirian. I'm sure you've heard the stories about what he did in Delenos. Teft nodded, and Jin tensed. Interesting. Does Jin know more about Karras? I assumed that the crystal he showed me was the only thing he found in the divinatory. But he certainly could have found something else that he kept to himself. Teft replied, I saw the memory crystal. I'm not sure the children are supposed to hear about this. Oh, please, Jonathan. That's hardly a secret. It was in the newspapers. She turned back to me. Have you learned anything more recent, Corrin? I shook my head. Nothing much. I heard he was sighted heading toward the Edrian border. Orden frowned. How'd you come upon that information? I spoke to my mother, as you suggested, but only briefly. The professor nodded. Good. Have you followed up on anything more recent? I shook my head. Nothing since then, unfortunately. I tried to find you again, but you'd headed into the tower at that point. Orden frowned. You can't always expect me to answer everything for you, Corrin. If you wanted information, you should have broken into the restricted archives in the divinatory. You expected me to break in? She chuckled. Whisper candidates are expected to be resourceful. You've proven that way in other areas, but I suppose you're still not much for trespassing. I'm sure we could work with that if you end up joining us, but no matter. That's not the issue right now. I hadn't actually heard the report about Karras heading toward Edria. That's something we need to investigate further. I'll give you a key to the archives. Ask the researcher for anything regarding Karras within the last few months. I nodded. I'll do that. But have you found any more information on your side to indicate if Karras is involved? Very little pertaining to him, I'm afraid, she admitted. Prior to your mention of Aloris as a suspect, I was considering the possibility that he had been the one to destroy the shield generators. That's still possible, but Aloris actually seems to fit better. I find it more likely that Karras is the one who is responsible for Tengen's disappearance. If he could fight one visage, it's possible he could have harmed another one. No one seemed very comfortable with that statement. It was sacrilege to think a mortal could harm a visage. They were, after all, supposedly aspects of the goddess herself, at least locally. I knew that in Kaelford, the mortalists' sect believed that the visages were actually heroes who had managed to climb all the way to the top of the towers and ascend to divinity. Pantheonists, a prominent religion that was primarily in Edria, believed that each of the visages was a god in their own right and biological children of Selyse. While that viewpoint wasn't popular here, I remembered Katashi's words. He'd called Tengen his brother. That definitely sounded more like they were independent entities that were biologically related. Of course, that also could have worked with the mortalist view. Maybe two brothers had simply made it to the top of a tower together. Or maybe the visages all really were bits of the same goddess, like our own Aspectist priests preached, and Katashi was just putting things into terms that I'd understand. I broke the silence after a few moments. Seems possible. It'd certainly explain why Katashi wanted to fight him. Orden nodded. Did Katashi mention Karras to you? I shook my head. Not a word on that subject. Moment of truth. I supposed that telling Orden the information at this point probably wasn't going to hurt. Probably. I rubbed the burn on my hand. It still hurt just a bit, but not as much as a true brand from an iron would have. Well, as far as I knew. Fortunately, a branding iron had not been one of the tools used to discipline me as a child.
Katashi wanted me to bring Vera to him inside the tower. Within the next week. Otherwise he's going to send a much larger attack.
Ah,
Orton sighed.
That explains a few things at least.
I frowned.
Such as?